if I talk in English for the talk,
I the word that you don't know something.
Okay. So the talk is really to introduce the importance of meditation and practice. Why we need such a thing as meditation? Why can't we just think our way out of our problems and issues? Why, as the Enlightenment of Europe assumed, that the rational mind is enough to see God, and in some way also the Rambam, the Jewish tradition, the Sechel Poel, I think he called it, is available to us if we just inquire deeply enough and think deeply enough. So it's a question. Before I talk about it, I do want to bring here some historical balance. That everything Maya said before was true and right, that we need to have practice in balance with the intellectual mind, otherwise we're a kumph. We're just trying to go in circles working out something which is a bit beyond the mind. We need practice, so it's clear. However, in the historical tradition of the Buddhism, the way in, the gate into the Dharma, is different for different people, and has been different at different historical periods and in different contexts. For example, in many monasteries over hundreds of years, and also in the text of the Buddha a few thousand years ago, one classic way to go into the Dharma is through generosity, nidivut. And until today, the monastery, the young people come into monasteries and they don't learn meditation. They help, they clean, they serve, they help others. And in a way, it gets the same place, which is a little bit reducing the self-importance, chashivut atzmi, as a result of, through giving others. So it brings conditions which then the meditation comes afterwards and really helps. Like the famous story of Milarepa, that built seven houses on seven hills with stones, pulling the stones up like Sisyphus on his back to build the houses on top of each hill. And every time his teacher said no, take it down and put it on the next hill. And this took 35 years. And only then he learned meditation. So it's kind of, it's not always the way, the first way in. And in the ancient tradition, householders were encouraged either to go through morality, and that is purifying your actions, and generosity, and from there to meditation, or starting with the intellectual inquiry, questioning, and from there to meditation, or starting with meditation. But in all cases, there has to be, at some point, there has to be meditation. That the Buddha never said you can get there without any, because that's my talk. I will explain why. So I think it's very clear to us that if we think about our real problems or issues in life, what is it that sotem, what is it that blocks us in our life? Issues are very, very sticky. They're not easy to solve, otherwise we would have solved them already. Our issues, whatever it is, our pain of life, what makes us small, what makes us feel we're an automatic pilot. I mean, a very obvious example, we've been 60 years here fighting our neighbours living on the same piece of land. Nobody's got 100 years. It seems like nobody, the cleverest, the most professors, the rabbis, the politicians, the sheikhs, nobody can break it. That's beyond a capacity of the mind, a human mind, to live in peace with the neighbours in this particular context, right? So I'm just using as an example, not to get into politics, but to show an example of how our problems are often beyond us to really solve through regular thinking or academic study or whatever. And Einstein says you can't solve problems with the same mind that created them. You can't solve problems with the same mind that created them. So we want freedom and we want clarity and we want happiness and we want spiritual experience and spiritual life and so on. But it seems to escape us. And very often we look around and we see the people who Ki'ilu have it, and very often they actually have the same mind of, like, it's not really there. Like a lot of religious, classic, normative religion. Like, it's about us and our God and our this and our Sheikh and our Allah and our Jesus, and it's just not so different from Maccabi Haifa and, you know, not so different. It doesn't feel like liberation, a lot of religious life. So we have to go deeper. The Buddhist teaching is a science of mind, and the Buddha said, and the Dharma says, if you purify your mind, happiness will follow you like a cart follows a horse. If you have an impure mind, then unhappiness follows you like a cart follows the horse. That the purifying of the mind is the key. And so I think what's really interesting for us today in the 20th century is that there's an ancient teaching, Dharma, that's been around a couple of thousand years, has not been broken, has developed constantly over a couple of thousand years, of mind. Of, you call it, in some way the Buddhist teaching is they're experts at inner space. They're the experts. So we go to them for understanding, at least in my view, of freedom based on mind and inner space. Because they're the experts. We lost it in the West. Why? Because we followed Aristotle and we got into materials and we got into, you know, Christianity and post-Christian duality and so on. I won't go into all that. That's something else. But we've actually lost this knowledge in a way in the West, and we need to take it back from somewhere, and the Buddhists seem to have to be experts at mind. So we're stuck in our regular mind, and we need to find a way out. And it's worth just being a little bit, just paying a little attention to why, how this is, and this is a whole other subject which is not for now, but the whole subject of karma and of how it happens that we get ourselves in a very constructed place, not very built. Our mind seems very built and we seem to be in a bit of a prison. We can't solve the problems. And how did this prison happen? It really happens from the moment the baby cries. And I'm watching it in my own grandchildren, Nechadim and Nechadot Sheli. I'm watching the way they're growing beautifully, but growing into structure. And the structure, in a way, is a garden and a prison also. And get habits and get reactions and get pains and get suffering and tavliot and patterns and so on. You see it building up. And you can't say to the baby, stop, stop, don't grow up, it's you're alright, stop, stop. Baby's, you know, at the age of 2 months, baby's already there, I want to know and I want to find, trying, you know, touching everything and exploring and
like growing.
And you're growing into samsara. Stop growing into samsara. But it's not possible because of the power or pressure of karma. So we live in a very constructed world. It's like we live in a ready-made house that we've been built not only through our life and our conditioning, but maybe many lives. And that's what makes us feel imprisoned. It's not our fault that we suffer. It's not our fault. We can take away the Christian view that of original sin and that we're all sinners. It's not that. The Buddhist view doesn't have anything like that. No sin, by the way, in the Dharma at all. Hare Yom Kippur, should know. No sin. It's just that we are feeling ourselves, we are imprisoned in constructed world. And then we want a way out. And we feel too, like I say, automatic pilot. There's a beautiful line in that expresses it from Hamlet, Shakespeare. When Hamlet was talking about his father, his stepfather, the king, he said, he's like someone that puts the shell of a nut, egos, klipa egos, shell of a nut, on his head and thinks that he's king of infinite space. So we feel a bit like that. So the Buddhist way is faced with this very constructed world, faced with the difficulties and suffering of life that we seem unable to solve. The Buddha left his castle, went out into a quest, khipus, inquiry. And it's important to understand that the Buddha didn't go off to believe in a god or a guru. He went off clearly expressing, I have to understand, I have to get to the bottom of this, I have to understand what's going on. He had four messengers come to give him this message. One was a sick person that he saw, one was a dead body, one was a poor person, and one was a monk. These are called the four messengers. And before that he was in prison, like we are. Very comfortable prison. Everything, we had everything. Still a prison. Like a comfort zone. You know, drawing a circle. I've got everything. I've got TV, I've got money in the bank, I've got a nice car, I've got this, that. But it's a prison also. So the character of the Dharma is set in the very first steps of the Buddha, how he responded to existential limitation or suffering. He responded by quest, inquiry, khipus. And that is the character until today. So the Dharma is not about belief. I know that in the Buddhist religion, millions of people in China and in Sri Lanka and in Thailand and Burma are Buddhist, and they're worshipping golden Buddhas and giving ptakin to the monks, or getting ptakin from the monk in return for money. That's religion. What to do is every religion. Okay, but the essence of the Dharma as a path is about inquiry and khipus and question and looking and seeing. So that's given it its character until today. And the Buddha said, I only teach one thing. What is happening in this 2 meter long thing here, from here to here? In other words, this 2 meter long body. That's all I teach. What is going on in this 2 meter long body? What's happening? There is a strong, in the original teachings, the first, the Pali Canon, the essential teachings of the Buddha, which is also in Zen and also in any authentic Buddhist teaching, expressed in a sutta text called the Kalama Sutta, of the early text. Don't believe in something just because everyone says you have to believe in it. Don't believe in something because the old books say. Don't believe in something because everybody's talking about it, the mind of the Edda, the herd. Don't believe in something because authority says it, or the priests say it, or the professors say it. But try, when you hear something and it feels good to you, try it out yourself. And if it's good for you and for others, practice it. It's a quest, not a belief system. So, the Buddhist path is about seeing, and especially things that we don't usually see. How our mind is constructed, how we are constructed, how our patterns, our suffering is created, and where in us is the freedom and the deep quiet and the unlimited side of us, the Buddha side, the Buddha mind in us. Right? Where is it, and how we recognize it? So that's the journey, and it comes from. It starts with the mind. It starts with. It's not so much the Buddhist world is not so much busy with how you act, mitzvot, kilo, but the source, where in your mind, how in your mind you see the world. From seeing the world right, your actions will be right. There is a nice poem from the Theravada tradition that says, I'll say it in Hebrew, it's easier. Zorim machshava, kotsrim pula. Zorim pula, kotsrim hergel. Zorim hergel, kotsrim ishiut. Zorim ishiut, kotsrim goral. Goral. Also nice after Yom Kippur to think about that. But it starts with the thought. It starts with the, even before the thought, because meditation is not about thought. Even before the thought is, the thought in a way is also a construction. So you could say, Zorim Toda'ah V'Kotzrim Machshava. You would add to it one more step at the beginning. We have in us consciousness, awareness, Toda'ah, Chofshi, and from there, and Mada, you know, the science will tell you this today, the neurology will tell you this, that there is a motivation or intention to act, or to do, or to want, and from there comes a construction in the mind, like movement or chaser, and then image of a cup of coffee in the mind, and then you go out and make a cup of coffee. So the whole movement comes from sort of a pure place, just being, and then along comes a cup of coffee into this place of pure being, and then you act. So we need to go to this basic, you know, almost before perception place, deepest place we can of knowing, of awareness. And that's why meditation is needed, because otherwise we will not be able to get there. It's very difficult to touch the deepest place of pure consciousness or being in us through thinking. So we do this, we touch these places by firstly a sense of coming home, a sense of returning to ourselves, a sense of, I would say, stopping, to stop and to gather back to ourselves. Because all of this conditioning, hatnaya, has made us lost in the world. We need to pull back our awareness from the world to join ourselves again. We are always in the world. What I need to do, what I need to seek, what is needed, or what I act, function, tifkud, asiya, it's like being in a movie, constantly in a movie. And when we go home, turn on television, also in a movie. So like the daily life is a movie, and the television is a movie, and everyone else is a movie. Where am I? So I've scattered my mind, lost my mind in the story. The story of what I need to be, who I need to be out there, what's the other people's stories. And we're always fully committed, or we invest, lashkia, we invest ourselves completely in the story. And there's no mind left to see who we are, what we are, because we're in the story. Our story. My job, my this, my that, my that, what I need, what I do, what I do. The pictures we have in the day, as I say, the TV, the radio, the politics, the open newspaper, we don't stop for a second being in story. So we need to stop. And that's the first element of meditation, is stopping. And for some people it's not easy. They are so busy, like a hamster on the wheel. So there's a little Zen story about a man who came running to his teacher, and his teacher said, "Oh, you look terrible. What's the problem? What's the matter with you?" He said, "Oh, I'm running away. What are you running from?" "My shadow." "Really? You're running from your shadow? That's all?" "And I'm running from my footsteps. Ekvot." "Oh, really? I can sort that one out for you. Sit down, no footsteps. Sit under a tree, no shadow. Problems aren't solved." His problems aren't solved, but he stopped. Right? So that story is about stopping. And stopping running. And that's one element of meditation, is just simply to stop. To stop the habit of running, which is usually running away. Running away from. Escaping from the difficulty. Running into activity and doing and blah, 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 you know. It's really running away, mostly.
Just a brilliant Dharma teacher, Bob Marley, used to say, there's a song of him, yeah? "You're running and you're running and you're running away. You're running and you're running and you're running away. You're running and you're running and you're running and you're away. But you're only running away from yourself."
Yeah. That's right.
That's Bob Marley.
So we need to find a still place, makom shoshek, which is at the same time a place where we gather ourselves back from being scattered, pizur, in the story. We collect ourselves back to here, to our real place, here. That's why the image of coming home is important. Like miflat, miklat, as I was saying this morning, singing this morning, the refuge, the miflat, we have it here. When we realize that, we don't need to run. And actually it's much safer here. Like that image of the, you know, the wave coming. If you run away from a big wave, bah, it catches you. If you go inside, it's all right. The wave will go over the top. Be okay. So, inside, quietness, in the sea, not knocked by the wave, we come back to ourselves. And that needs learning. To stop is not easy, because the habit of running. So we try and stop, and you experienced it already, and what happens? Our body stops and the mind keeps running. The mind just goes as if, so in fact usually we don't even notice how much our mind is running, but when the body stops then we see, my God, my mind is running like crazy. And it's like stopping an express train in the middle. It's not so easy to stop, but it's definitely part of the story, and it's something that we learn gradually, and we don't learn it through force. And I'll be talking more about that in the next, today and tomorrow, in the instructions. We don't stop it by force. We don't force the mind to stop. We do it more cleverly through letting things be, even in motion, but letting things be, not to be totally invested, involved in this running. Let things stop being so, stop giving the importance to the running. That's all. And then things slowly slow down by themselves. When we stop a little bit, and stop, by the way, stopping is where we use the breath and the body. It's slowing down. I mean, you just saw it before with the walking, perhaps. Usually, we're walking, we don't know we walk, we have in our mind, I want to go shopping, or I need to go and see somebody, or I need to go to work, or I need to go to my car. We don't know we walk. So we're in automatic mode. And stopping is stopping the automat, and then we begin to see where we are. So that's the second process. Stopping is the first, and the second is the seeing. And they always go together. And in the Buddhist language, it's samadhi. It's the concentration, the stopping, and mindfulness is the seeing, the awareness, being aware, and they go together. Concentration is, I mean, I can say it like this. Concentration is my ability to keep my attention on my hand all the way. Not to know it there and then think about something else, and then I remember it here and then think about something else and remember it here. But to be with the hand, knowing it all the way from the beginning to the end, that's the concentration. And that's the kind of stopping. No stories, no this, no escaping, no running. The mindfulness is knowing the hand, how it feels, how it is, what it is, what's going on in it. It feels like this, and then it feels like that, it feels like that, it feels like that. Okay? So the two always go together. Because if you think about it, in our ordinary life, we know things. We know we've got a hand. But if it doesn't disturb us, we have a moment that we know we have a hand, and then we move to something else. If our hand hurts us, then we start being interested in the hand. Generally, we don't know we have a hand. We don't know we have a head, unless we have a headache. Right? If we have a headache, we know we have a head, and then we quickly take Acamol so as to stop knowing we have a head. So our normal mind is just jumping from what's needed. If we have a headache, we know we have a head. If we need to hold something, we know we have a hand. What's needed? Meditation is different because it goes inside, it uses concentration to be with something for longer, and it uses the power of mind to go into it and explore. And that changes the experience from a sort of automat, or from being lost in the story, to mindfulness, to the non-automat, to opening this chain of awareness in us. So how does it help us? When we see ourselves more clearly, we see the content, HaTochen. Slowly, slowly, in our life of meditation practice or spiritual life, we include more and more of what it is we're made of. What is the content? What is the inner life? What is it? What is our suffering really made of? What is it? Why do we suffer? Get close to understanding. What is pain and discomfort? What is comfort? I mean, look more deeply at our quiet and our non-quiet, our pains, our story, our conditioning, atmaya, how we built our demons, like I say. We look, meditation is about looking at ourselves in the Bhagavad Gita line, in the straight, clear, as we are. There's a nice story about a woman who dreamt that she was being chased by demons. And she dreamt that one demon, was chasing her, and she was running through forests and trees and fields and running, and demon after big demon, Shed Gadol, big Shinayim. And in the end, she came to Klif Tzuk, and she couldn't run anymore. So she turned around to the demon. The demon came up, big eyes, big teeth. She turned to the demon and said, "What are you going to do to me?" And the demon looked down and said, "I don't know, it's your dream, isn't it?" So we take control of our own demons. Instead of running away, we turn to face our demons. And as we do that, we have power. We bring back the power to ourselves. And we stop running. But we have to see them. They're our demons. We need to see them. A demon, let's think of a demon together, like a very common one that probably everybody has, is Bikkurim. Bikkurim feud. On ourselves and on other people. We all have, everyone has. So, usually without any insight, we just do it. And we don't even know we do it. We're just in the story. Something happens, my daughter, my son, or my mother-in-law, or don't know what, my neighbor, whatever, blah, 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 blah. We straight throw Bikkurim, or ourselves, oh, I'm no good at this, why do I do this, I did this, and I always make a mess of things, you know, well, whatever. Instead of that, we turn our insight, we turn to this voice in us and actually begin to see it. Oh, there it is. Oh, yes. Hakol Bikkurati. Here it is. Oh, okay. Aninokshi. Okay. I see you. Oh, not again. I see you. 100th time. I see you. One of my teachers once said, if you've got a judgmental mind, just count the number of thoughts that you have of judgment. When you've reached 1,000, that'll be the end of your problem. So it's seeing is the second part, and seeing involves seeing what we're running away from, also seeing our vulnerability, shavrirut. Seeing how we defend ourselves, seeing how we run, escape from ourselves and from life, seeing the whole lot. And slowly, 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 this seeing makes the demons less pressure on us, less control of us. We find we take back we take back our life. We become masters of our life. With all the demons and everything. They're still there, but we are master. We can't cancel them totally. But the meditation, the mindfulness, when applied to ourselves, looking in the mirror, the mara, when applied to ourselves as we really are, we can live with all those demons. They're us, they're ours, but we're alright with them. They become smaller, smaller, smaller all the time. But for that, we need the mindfulness. We will not do it. We can go, yes, we can be helped by other ways. Go to psychologists for many years. All the ways are good and helpful. It's not that meditation is the only way. There are many ways of dealing with things. But meditation has the character to empower us to stop running and open our real inner world. And empower us to be the container. Hamechil. To contain our life. In awareness, and it's all right. And from there we find the quiet and the stillness and the big mind. And it's a big mind. 90%, we live in 10% of our reality. 90% is gone. We don't know. Don't know how we are. We don't know what we do. So we want to get back the 90% that we lost, which can be sometimes uncomfortable. Possible, it's uncomfortable. It's 90%. Probably uncomfortable, because otherwise you wouldn't run away from it into the 10% that feels ki'ilu okay. But that's back in the Buddha's castle, which is the prison. So we want the 90% of our lived experience, even if it's difficult, because then we have a very big life. So, the meditation is about stopping, samadhi, staying, looking at things for longer, looking into things, inside things, in our real experience, in a fresh and neutral way. We don't select, we don't be try and only look at things we like. We non-so, we look at the rose, but also the thorns, kotsin. Not just looking at roses. That's a little different in the Buddhist practice from maybe other kinds of New Age meditation, where meditation on music, meditation on love, meditation on flowers, which is fine, but 90% of our life is the thorns, not just the rose. The rose has got thorns. We don't want to just look at the rose and forget the thorns, because the thorns will come back at us. You know, they're there. So meditation, in the Buddhist sense especially, is being non-selective, looking at the... So our body hurts when we sit, we have a pain in the body, that's good enough for an object of meditation. We have joy, and the flower and the rose, that's beautiful. The thorn, that's beautiful too. So meditation is about both the rose and the thorns. Okay, it's not selective, it's taking it, but it's becoming a bigger mind. And when we practice being in the 90%, the bigger mind, we don't construct a new person. We don't stop being ourselves and make a new Buddhist person. What happens, the point of it is not only that we become a bigger container for our life, but that the more we see, the more we become free. And the goal here is freedom. Freedom from things that are holding us in prison that we don't even know. And we cannot know. because we don't see them. They're in the subconscious, the unconscious, they're controlling us, they're the pains and the difficulties, they're the conditioning and the habits, there's the patterns and the tavniyot, they're the hurt and the scars, salakot, that we've had in our life, that we've been hurt or we hurt others. All that stuff is there. So the purpose of meditation is to be able to see it all. We do not make censura and cut it out. We see it all, but as we see and we sit quietly, present, with all that stuff, we become bigger than all that stuff. That stuff gets smaller, the demons get smaller, and we have a sense of lightness, a sense of freedom and lightness with our stuff. They'll still be there, but lightness. Like Dalai Lama, I once saw him on television, and he was in a discussion with people about the situation of women the situation of women in the Buddhist world, which is not so easy. They still have a lot of tradition and stuff there, and he himself can't change it totally. He changed a bit, but he starts to cry when he heard of the difficulties of women in the Buddhist world sometimes. And here was this great master, tears rolling down his face. And then a few minutes later, it was sunny and shining, and the sun came out again, and he was like, yes, there will be feelings, and there will be the full life, and we will not be a neutral, sort of like they are. The purpose isn't to become a white sheet of paper again, you know, blank, like mochek. Meditation is not hardamakvali, anesthesia. It's living fully with the whole of our life, but it becomes lighter and lighter and lighter. They're all there, all the demons, all the shedim, all the actors are still on the stage, but first of all, we're not the Sahkana Rishi. We're the audience, we're the actors, we're the stage, we're seeing the whole thing, and we've become a lot lighter and freer. And that's the journey. And meditation is a major, major tool on this journey. So I think that's enough for the moment. We have an opportunity for detailed questions in the groups later on in the afternoon. So we have two groups, Maya and myself, so we can also discuss more detailed questions. If there's one or two questions now specifically about my talk, something needs to be clear that wasn't clear to you, I'd be happy to answer it for a few minutes, although I don't want now at this point to get into a lot of discussion and so on, debate. But if there's something that wasn't clear, you're welcome to ask, and we'll go further into these things in the groups in the afternoon. Yeah. Hey, it should be good. I got an email. I need to be speaking. Ma. What? Oh, yeah.
ועכשיו אתה התייחסת, בגלל אני כן עכשיו שואלת, כי בדיוק אמרת, אני התייחסת לזה, שאתה לא רוצה שאני אצלה. כלומר, שהמטרה שאני לא רוצה. אז אני לא מבין אותך, ואני לא מבין אותי, אני חושבת, אני אוהבתי שאני אוהבתי, יש כל מיני שאני מגבינים, אני אוהבתי שמחה, יש כל מיני שאני מגבינים, יש כל מיני שאני מגבינים, יש כל מיני שאני
Mm. יודעים שהקוץ זה קוץ ופרח זה פרח, קוץ כואב, פרח יש ריח טוב, וזהו. אז אין שיפוטיות שם, זה משהו ישר ופשוט, יותר גדול מהקוץ ומהפרח. זה אומר, הבעיה זה הקוץ עושה לנו, אנחנו מתעסק עם הקוצים כל הזמן, אז הקוצים מציק אותנו, אנחנו כל הזמן באבוידנס שלא רוצים את הקוצים ורק רוצים את הפרחים, אנחנו בונים את כל החיים שלנו שזה יותר פרחים ופחות קוצים, אז כל מה שאנחנו עושים עם זה, זה הבעיה. אז רגע שרואים בעיניים של מיינדפולנס, יש פה קוץ, כואב לי, אוקיי, ואחרי שנייה יש פרח, נעים לי, וככה ממשיכים. זה אומר שאני הרבה יותר גדול משניהם, ודווקא I don't know if you understand this, but we actually, because we're so busy with worrying about the kotzim and making the kotzim big demons, we don't actually see the experience of the kotz itself. I don't know if you understand that, because in words it's not so easy to explain. But we don't actually fully experience even the cost, the pain of something that, because we're so busy making hashlachot and binyanim and interpretatiot and haganot and brechot and all of that instead of the cost. And the cost is good. Okay, okay, that's what it's like. Like I said before, you know, if we fully experience a headache, we also fully experience our head. Otherwise, we don't know we have a head because we're so busy avoiding headaches. You know, it goes together, and the same with the rose. If we see the rose as it really is, wow, the rose. But if we don't see the rose as it is, it's just a field of roses like we see on television. We change the channel. You know, so it also gets us close to our experience, but certainly, we can't separate the two. There will be cups and there will be a rose as well.
אני יכולה לחשוב מצב שבו כמו שאני מתבוננת בפחדים שמנהלים אותי אני ממוססת אותם, אבל כל עוד אני חווה אותם אני מנוהלת שם.
נכון, בגלל האוטומט. זה האוטומט בדיוק שאנחנו רוצים לפתור, שזה לא אוטומט, שאפשר לראות פחד ולבחור מה לעשות עם זה, לא להיות באוטומט שרגע שפחד מיד אנחנו מגיב, ואז זה בסיס של כל מלחמות וכל, זה יש מחיר לאוטומט הזה. אז לאט לאט אנחנו יכול לחוות את הקומפלקס שזה כל מחשבות, תגובות, היסטוריה, מה היה, you know, הילדות שלנו, לא יודע, הכל בתוך הרגע של הפחד, ולהבין מה לעשות. אני אגיד לך, אני אספר לך סיפור אישי על זה. היה לי שנים של פחד קהל, ממש קשה, והייתי מרצה באוניברסיטה לונדון בביוכימיה, זה כל כך קשה לי לדבר לפני הסטודנטים, Oh, it was like הבטן שלי מתכבד והפה יבש ולא יכולתי לדבר ולא יכולתי להיות בשקט רגע בגלל אני הרגשתי שכל כל העולם ייפול עליי וה תופק ממש I was in panic cold palm but I started to use meditation so first of all I practiced in a safe place בתוך רטריטים. איך זה שהפחד, אני אפילו דמיינתי את קהל ואני כמרצה, ממש כמו דמיון, וראיתי והגשתי את הבטן והלב והזעה וזה תופעות כאלה, ולאט לאט דרך יושבים ורואים את כל הקומפלקס הזה כתופעה, לא כמה כבעיה, כתופעה as a phenomenon, דברים מתרחש, הבטן מתכבד, זה מתרחש. משהו happened, something happening. Just watch it, neutral, non-judgmental, like this was a corpse. I was looking at it without judgment. Okay, what is it? This is this, 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 this. And slowly, slowly, it just became less and less and less and less by not supporting it as a tavnit. But if you're afraid and you act, and you're afraid and you act, you're afraid you act, then it stays as a tavnit, and we're stuck with it. So, and it slowly went away. Also, one other thing I did, odd about, and I nichnasti lifnei ha-shiur, daka, ve-ishtamashti ita nishima sheli, ke-sug shel antidote, shel ha-pachas. Poshut ha-ne yimadati lifnei kol ha-kisaot, וכשאנשים נכנסים, הסטודנטים, אני עבדתי עם נשימה פה בבטן כדי להרגיע קצת את כל המערכת. אז בין השני, העזרה הראשונה אפשר להגיד, והתרגול בתנאים טובים של הרטריט, אז זה נעלם לגמרי. לא לגמרי, 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 אני לפעמים מרגיש פה בבטן איזה כזה גרגיר של זיכרון או שיריות של ההרגשה, של הפחד. But that's it. That's what there is left. So it works, the practice, it works. But it doesn't happen straight away. It may take years. In my case, it took years. But still, it's better than doing it, and it's cheap. It doesn't need a psychologist. Better than doing nothing. And it does work. It does work. Everybody that's been deeply in Vipassana practice and deeply in meditation practice will tell you that it does the job. It's a very important tool for us. It does the job.
אמרת קודם, תוך כדי שהלכנו, שאם המחשבה באה, לתת למחשבה ללכת בלעדיי. נדמה לי שזאת המילה שהשתמשת. עכשיו אמרת, אני יותר גדול מהקוץ או מהפרח. מי זה אני בלעדיי? זה התודעה שלי או מי זה?
כן. יש בתוך התודעה כאילו יושב שם בעל, הוא חושב שיש לו בעלות על הכל. הבעלות או ההזדהות עם המחשבות מאפשר את המחשבות, נותן את הכוח של המחשבות, כאילו השליטה של המחשבות זה בא מההזדהות איתם. I need a cup of coffee, I am invested in it, אני לגמרי בתוך המחשבה האלה, אז זה נותן את הכוח למחשבה, וזה מופיל את אותנו, את כל הבן אדם. אם יש איום, אז אפילו יותר, הרבה יותר גדול, אם זה לא מחשבה סתם, אבל מחשבה של איום, אז בוודאי זה מופיל מיד, מופיל את כל הכוח של אני, ההזדהות של אני. אז אם אנחנו יכול לקחת צעד אחורה אז רואים שיש תהליכים בתוך התודעה שלא דורש לגמרי את ההתדהות האלה. אפשר לזהות מחשבות בלי להתדהות איתן.
זה
העומס
של התודעה?
אני זה סוג של ownership, בעלות, הרגשה של בעלות או החוויה של בעלות על כל החוויה שלי. יש חוויה של בעלות, כאילו השחקן הראשי זה אני שעושה את כל המשחק פה. אז לאט לאט אפשר לראות שזה לא כל כך ככה, אבל זה נושא אחר. וזה נושא גדול בעצם, but I give it effect. It's a good question. כן. כן, אני לא רוצה להיכנס לזה יותר מדי עכשיו בגלל, אבל זה חשוב ש... כן, אני רוצה לתת איזה מפה קטנה. יש הרבה זרמים והרבה תרגול, ובדרמה יש 80,000 סוגי של מדיטציה שהבודה נותן לכל מיני אנשים, כל אחד לפי האישיות של הבן אדם. כן, שמתאים לי. אבל אפשר להגיד עד עכשיו כדאי שאתם יודעים שיש את הסמאדי, את הסטופינג, ויש את המיינדפולנס, שזה הסיים. When we stop, what do we see? Okay? ויפאסנה זה פחות או יותר ה-clarity that arises when we see. The practice is mindfulness. The fruit of the practice is tovana, insight. Vipassana means insight. Vipassana. Akshav. So, vipassana be'emet, lefi ha-safa pali, ha-safa atik, ze lirot betoch. Vi, ze ben. Vipassana, ze seeing, lirot. Ze pachot yiter insight in English. To see in. Tovana, be'ibrit pachot yiter. Insight is seeing in. So that's a quite close translation of vipassana. עכשיו, בגלל סיבות היסטורי, המילה ויפאסנה has become stuck on a technique and not on the fruit of the technique. So it's a bit like saying the word music. Well, when someone is doing a scale, it's not exactly music, but you can say, I'm practicing music. You see, it's like that. So vipassana is really the fruit of it. So it's been given a name on a technique and a course and a retreat and so on. So we sometimes use the word because everybody knows the word. Vipassana has become a word that everybody knows. And so we use it sometimes for long retreats, silent retreats. So seeing inside is vipassana, and to do it really deeply, often it's helpful to go on a retreat, silent retreat for some days. It just really helps to have power of insight, to have a longer retreat. So the name vipassana is used very often for longer retreats in silence. But it's not really, this is the wrong... It's a label which is not really right. But it has in its importance is seeing into, which is similar to the purification of people. This is a deep point, the Nekudah De Amuka. But when we see clearly כמו האישה עם השד, when we see בגובה עיניים הנושאים כמו הפחד שאמרת ואני סיפרתי. אני לא עשיתי, אני לא אמרתי צנזורה, you know, להרוס את השד של פחד קהל. רק על ידי סיים השד מקטין את השד, רק על ידי סיים, in a non-judgmental way. Yeah, she is there, but not important anymore. So seeing and insight become close. You see, the talik shel tihur, the talik shel insight, tovana, are very close in meditation. I think also in psychology, psychoanalysis would talk about this as well, seeing, you know. But very specifically in meditation, that's where we're going. The tihur comes from seeing. So let's have some quiet practice now till our lunch break. שימת לב לתנוחה, קודם כל, שאנחנו יושבים ביציבות, כמו סלע. יושבים כמו סלע. שדברים עוברים כמו מים, סלע בתוך נהר, אבל אנחנו יושבים חזק, באמצע כל הזרם של חיים. תהליך של חזרה הביתה, גישה של הגעה לבית אמיתי, המפלט, זה מה שאני חווה ברגע הזה. עכשיו לא צריך לרוץ יותר, לא צריך לשנות דברים, לא צריך להיות מישהו או מישהי, לא צריך לרכוש משהו, לא צריך לדאוג על הצלחה או כישלון. יודעים, נופלים בתוך מה שיש, מה שאנחנו חווים באמת.
אפשר לבחור את המשיפה והשאיפה כסוג של עוגן או בסיס לעזור לנו עם הסמאדי, עם הסטופינג, עם הקונצנטריישן, steadiness of mind, או בבטן, או בית חזה, או כניסה של האף. Just resting in the genuine experience, direct experience of the in-breath and the out-breath, and the space between the in and the out. מחשבות לא צריך להפריע לנו. לפעמים יש מחשבות, לפעמים יותר, לפעמים פחות. אפשר, יש לנו את הכוח, את החופשיות, לצאת מהשרשרת של מחשבות ולבחור עוד פעם את הנשימה. שם יש מסע מעניין מהזדהות עם המחשבות לקשר כאן ועכשיו עם הנשימה.
אנחנו נעשה שעה הפסקה של ארוחה ושטיפת כלים, וזה הפסקה רק מתנוחת הישיבה, היא לא הפסקה מתונית עלינו. אני מאוד מזמינה השקט הזה. אם זאת הייתה, יש המון בלפית ואפשר לדבר על בין הרבה מה לשתוק. אבל אני רוצה רק להסב את תשומת הלב במקום מסוים שבו נראה לנו עכשיו שהעניין הוא האוכל בהפסקה, כן? ונורא בקלות איך תשומת הלב מתנקזת לה לתוך האוכל. אז אני מאוד מאוד ותשומת הלב זה משהו מאוד פתוח שעושים לב לנו לכל הדברים שקורים בזמן שמכינים אוכל, ששמים, מחממים, שמים על השולחן. ובעיקר בגלל שענייננו הוא הסתכלות על התודעה, אז בו בזמן שאני מרגיש את המרקם של האוכל, שאני מניח את המניחת, את הלחת על השולחן, או כשהאוכל נכנס לפה, מאוד מעניין לשים לב להלכי הרוח שמלווים את הפעולות שאני עושה. Okay. אני מאוד ממליצה ללוות אותם עוד מלפני שהאוכל נכנס לפה, וממש לראות מה האפקט, מה קורה. מה קורה לי לנוכח המראה של האוכל, מה קורה לי איפה זה פוגש אותי במיצים של הפה. ובכלל פשוט ללוות את ההפסקה הזאת ככה בתשומת לב מאוד פתוחה. והאכילה זה באמת הזדמנות, אבל זאת אומרת זה לא צריך להיות רק זה, אבל זאת באמת הזדמנות, כי אנחנו המון פעמים אני לפחות אוכלת מאוד מהר, צריכה להזכיר לעצמי בצורה מאוד יזומה לאכול לאט, וכשאני אוכלת אני גם צריכה להזכיר לעצמי שאני אוכלת, כי בדרך כלל נורא קל להיות במקום אחר אחרי הביס השני שלישי, וחבל, בדרך כלל אני משקיעה באוכל של זה. זה הזמנה. שתיים, שמעתי את זה.